begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back to Discourse. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, legitimate podcaster.
Wow, you're a legitimate podcaster. One day, my mum said, I probably can be as well. I just have to do a course. But the fees she set are very high.
Right. Well, that's good. You should do that course.
Hopefully my internet doesn't die during the show this week, because I tell you what, it's been dying this evening.
Oh, dear.
It has died twice. And died last night. I think that I won't say what it is. Should I say what it is?
I don't know.
I'll say what it is. It's an Orcon Home Hub, and I think it's falling apart.
They're pretty old, those things, aren't they?
No, it's brand new. Oh, no, it's a Genius. It's the Genius
thing. I was going to say, I think it's a Genius.
It's a Genius thing. And I've had a feeling that that thing was a piece of shit ever since I opened it.
It's got some weird little problems with it, that's for sure.
And so a week or two ago, there was a night when it all went really badly wrong. And then the following Morgan, Orcon, Morgan, the following
see what
Morgan,
you did there.
I have
you
been
just
drinking.
Slip a little bit of German.
I have been drinking.
Yep, no, that's fine. You're German, that's fine.
Yeah. Mein Leben! That's about all I can do, and that's only because it was in a game.
Yeah.
Achtung!
Achtung! Achtung! Mein Leben, verboten!
Yeah.
Carry on.
Orcon, who I like a great deal, they said the next morning, we are suffering a bit of an overload on the help desk. Please reboot your router. So it's obvious that something had gone wrong on a broader scale, because that had fixed mine as well. Of course, I'd restarted mine long before that, and it had worked just fine after that. I wonder if they sent out a firmware update or something.
Oh, yeah, I think it does have over-the-air firmware updates on it.
I wonder if they did that, and it didn't go very well.
They also could have been changing something at their, on their authentication server or something.
That's
who
true
knows?
As well. Of course, that's also true. It might be, entirely coincidental. But it seems that since then, it has been very unreliable.
God, if only we both knew the head of networks at Orcon.
If only. And the head of customer support.
And various other
yeah, all sorts of roles.
Department at Orcon.
All sorts of roles. I've got to say, though, that the reason that I am so bitter sometimes on Twitter, at Orcon specifically, is because they are so close to really fucking great most of the time that when they do stupid little things every now and then, it's very upsetting. It's very upsetting for me because they're so close to so great.
You want more from them. You expect more from them.
Yeah, well, my expectations are very high because usually they deliver such a great service. It's why Yeah, go on.
They are full of cluefulness, and yeah. It's just unfortunate that occasionally they make awkward missteps.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a lot of problems since.
Like, for instance,
I had
posting
some
my personal
big problems when I got Orcon set up. Sorry, when I got Genius set up. Yeah. But since then, I've been pretty good.
Mm.
And there was my disagreement with them about how I would go about changing to the new plan when they launched those new plans with more data and stuff. But
yeah.
That got sorted out too.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a disagreement with them. They, I was on the, I can't even remember what it was called, small business plan or something, which was essentially the same as their normal home user DSL plan. And they changed the terms of the home user one, but they didn't change the terms of the small business one.
That sort of thing's pretty common amongst the telecommunications industry, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, that's right, because I tell you what, I can't say I've used a lot of ISP business help desks, but the Orcon business help desk was absolutely flawless, flawless, which is why it pissed me off so much to have
because
to move
I once
to a
upon
residential
a time
account.
Had telehousing with Orcon.
Yeah,
there are still occasions when I call their help desk and they get confused because my account still has something on it that flags it as a business account from
right.
when I had telehousing with them, or despite right. the fact that my telehousing was free.
Yeah.
So occasionally the person I talk to when they help desk would be like, oh, your account's a business account. I can't help you. And I'd be like, no, it's not. But the alternative, I could try and go to the business help desk, which I've done a few times.
Yeah.
I think they've sorted that out now. I don't think they're confused about who I am.
Mm. They don't seem to be very confused about who I am. on account of such a whiny fucking crybaby on Twitter. God, I'm a crybaby. But and they never really deserve it.
No.
I mean, because the thing is, I mean, like I said, the job they do normally is so good.
Yep.
They never really deserve my crybabiness. And they're always really good sports. And they always help out. But you know.
I did a weird little passive-aggressive tweet the other day that wasn't really meant to be. But it was saying that despite the fact I didn't want to, I might have to look at moving my mobile away from telecom.
Yeah.
And that's because in my edit suite where I spend, let's say,
20 hours a day.
Yeah, 8 to 10 hours a day, depending on, you know, just how busy I'm feeling. Mm. I have virtually no mobile signal at all. A couple of times throughout the day, my phone will just magically decide to get enough mobile signal to receive a bunch of text messages it's missed.
Yeah.
But that's it. Mm. So I thought, well, you know, I'm paying whatever it is a month for a plan that I can't use during many of my waking hours.
Yeah. After how good telecom's been, and I think it actually really is Richard Irvine being good.
Well,
after how good they seem to have been lately, I'm really close to switching, especially considering they have recently released a plan that appears to take the place of the thing that is holding me at Vodafone now, which is the Best Mate thing. They're right. Like, it's like $19 a month. Because I'm not really a big phone user.
They have Best Mates at Telecom. They have whatever the Telecom equivalent is. They
right,
have
but your Best Mate will need to be at Telecom.
Oh, yes.
Right. But they have a new thing where you just get like 500 minutes or...
Oh,
like,
right, they do. They have
Some amount of minutes anyway.
Well, it's interesting because Telecom, Vodafone and 2Degrees have all been in a little arms race this week over the $19 price point on their prepay plans. So I think Telecom acted... Well, 2Degrees has always had a $19 plan which had data and minutes and texts. And Telecom this week launched one that was... I'm going off the top of my head. I think it was $19 for... 400 megs, 60 minutes of talk time anytime to any phone, and 4,000 texts.
Yeah.
And 2Degrees upped theirs to be 500 megs, 50 minutes talk time, and 5,000 texts.
Yeah.
And Vodafone have launched one as well that is very similar, right around, you know, give or take 100 megs, give or take 10 minutes, give or take 1,000 texts.
You know what I once had? Once upon a time, when I was with Bell South...
Remember Bell South.
I had off-peak advantage.
Yep.
And it was about $20 a month, and it was unlimited off-peak calls. Oh, my God, it was so good.
I remember having, I'm going to say it was, I don't know what it was. I think it was $30 a month, and I got 200 off-peak minutes. And I remember, you know, waiting till the clock turned to 7 so I could make phone calls.
Yeah. We're such cheap bastards.
Well, unfortunately, that was the way it was. You know, you had... you had off-peak minutes, and then there was the thing where, you know, plans, they stopped doing the off-peak, on-peak thing, but then plans started being, you know, in-network minutes only, which was really annoying when roaming happened and you couldn't tell just by looking at a phone number anymore whether they were on-net or not.
Mm.
So I got stung a couple of times by someone who moved from, when I was on Vodafone, someone who moved from Vodafone to, I'm going to say 2Degrees. And I'd call them and talk to them, and then when my phone bill came, I suddenly... had to pay like $65 for these calls that I'd assumed were covered in my whatever number of 200 minutes a month or something I received at the time, which was really annoying. And their response to that was, oh, you can text this number, you can text the phone number to this number here and we'll tell you whether it's on our network or not. It's like, well, that's not practical.
Yeah. So the question from the chat room, who makes phone calls anymore? And it's right. And that's...
I do. Do you know why?
Yeah.
Because when someone sends me a text, I can't be asked texting back and forth 4 or 5 times to finally get the specific details that we need to get out of the way. I often reply to a text with a phone call.
Yeah.
It's often easier.
Given how overly verbose I usually am, when I send one text to a friend, it often, you know, multiplies somehow. It's right, though. I mean, a 30-second voice conversation, you can get a hell of a lot more across.
Yeah, and this is not likely to be the misunderstandings that you get in texts, and you don't have to keep clarifying small points.
All right, so I've arranged our guest who was meant to be on this week for next week, just while you were... talking then about minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Talk about multitasking.
Multitasking.
Sort of multitasking, except that it meant I wasn't listening at all.
Actually, look, Morgan, before we go on with the show proper,
yeah.
I've just got to go and take a pee break. Can you make sure you turn off my radio mic while I go?
Yeah, will do.
Okay, see you soon.
Mm.
Back.
Oh my God, Dylan! Really sorry. Something just went horribly wrong. I'll have to. I'll just cut that out, though. It's not going to be a problem.
Cool. I washed my hands, by the way. If you were
What have you been eating?
What? Nothing. Just the regular.
I can practically smell the asparagus from here. I tell you what.
So, have you got any news?
Yeah, I've got all sorts of news. You know, there's something that is it common to have never really caught a fish before and live in New Zealand, because that was me until the weekend, and then I finally went fishing.
You'd actually never caught a fish?
I'd never caught a real fish.
Right.
I'd caught like sprats in a thing, in one of those weird
Perspex tubes.
Exactly. I'd done that kind of thing as a kid, and I'd gone fishing, even with my father, but I guess maybe he was a rubbish fisherman. So I went out on a boat down the Coromandel on Saturday, and went fishing with people who actually knew what they were doing, and caught like a bunch of snapper and stuff, and it was such good fun.
Right.
I tell you what, really, really fun. I was first to catch one. I don't know what the size limit is normally. I think it's like 27 centimeters or something. But on the boat, they decided anything under 30 was out.
Yeah.
And so the first one I caught was like 32 or something. And then I caught another one, and it was also like 32. And I was like, I want to throw it back, because I wanted to have thrown back a fish.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and it worked really well. Many other kinds of fish. Many fish caught and thrown back, actually. Many small snapper, including some that were caught like foul hooked in the eyeball or hooked through the top of the head. There's a lot of very strange things that fish manage to do to themselves.
Yeah.
Feel very sorry, though, for the kauai that got caught, though, because apparently it was good bait, someone decided. So its head got chopped off, but while it was alive. So its head was chopped off, and it was filleted, and its body thrown in, probably before the head was even dead. I found that quite uncomfortable. It reminded me of the early days of the Iraq War, when young men in orange jumpsuits seemed to get their heads whacked off on camera quite regularly. It reminded me a little bit of that.
I think if you're a seasoned fisherman,
yeah,
then you stop seeing fish as little swimming creatures,
yeah,
and you don't worry about things like that.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's fairly humane. You chop the head off, you sever the spinal cord. There's not really much going on after that.
Well, it's better than most deaths for a fish, probably, which would be getting.
I don't think
chomped.
There's a lot of good deaths for a fish.
No, probably the. I mean, the thing that we mainly did was the old icky stick, which is just a spike in the brain. That seems like it's probably the best death a fish can hope for.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's probably lots of horrible deaths awaiting a fish, so that might not be the worst.
Anyway, so this week I learned how to actually catch a fish. That was very exciting.
Yeah, I've caught some fish. I don't care about fishing. I never really enjoyed it. I tried to enjoy it when I was younger, and I had a friend who was really into it. We used to go fishing from the rocks at Takapuna, but never really enjoyed it that much.
Is the reason
quite
you didn't
like
enjoy
fish.
It that you weren't on a boat? Because I tell you what,
I like being on a boat, so I could probably get into that.
I really enjoyed driving the thing as well.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. I could just do that.
I drove it up to the ramp, and that was fucking scary, man. Watching the sounder go lower and lower and lower.
Mind you, you've seen me on a jet ski.
You'd probably fall out of the boat somehow. No one would be able to explain it, but you'd be in the water.
I'd flip the boat.
How did that happen?
Wave, turn the boat 90 degrees, hit the water, and just flip the boat.
Yeah, he was just idling along, and then suddenly disaster. I don't understand it. So let's have you got one of the special professional thing boards as well? Because I just heard some stuff on your end like that.
Yeah, it's a lot like that. No, I have a wife who'll cough for me on demand.
I was just saying you can cough on demand.
Morgan's got buttons that make noises, and then you cough as well. So that's good. Morgan's got buttons that make coughs. It's a podcast.
She doesn't give a shit.
Giving me a ridiculously confused look. I probably should have said nothing.
Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Podcast? What are you doing over there?
Why do you spend all this time sitting there talking to yourself?
Aren't you meant to be doing the dishes? Why did I ever marry you?
15 minutes.
15 minutes. That probably means...
And now the news.
a hero for all mankind, Neil Armstrong passes at age 82. Pioneer and NASA legend will be remembered for his legendary step. Apparently he was a bicycling drug cheat.
Yeah. Yep, that's the one.
And
he may have died, but they can never take those Tour de France titles.
And he played like a trumpet or something.
Yep, that's him. So yeah,
and also faked a moon landing on the moon.
There's so many. I know it's too soon and all that, but there were so many good jokes on Twitter about it.
No.
Yeah.
No, they weren't.
I won't say them, but they were there.
I think I just did say them, didn't I? Approximately, I paraphrased them.
Well, you didn't do the one about yet another thing that Buzz Aldrin will be second at.
That's right. That one was actually good. Poor Buzz Aldrin. But Buzz Aldrin does get to punch idiots in the face.
Yeah, that's worthwhile.
Fucking hell. Yeah, incredible stories actually all around the all through the 1960s. That program leading up to the moon missions, absolutely astonishing.
It was so extraordinary and so dangerous that it's kind of hard to imagine you'd be allowed to. I mean, would they do it now? You know, these things where you're like, well, we'll just put these five people in this giant rocket
and see what
just,
happens.
Maybe it'll explode and maybe it won't.
Well, you know, that kind of experimentation, probably they got away with it because, you know, a lot of the space program was thanks to Nazis.
And the Soviets. Like, oh, we'll just send these. Oops, they did. Oh, we'll just. Oh, they did too. Oh, yep. Well. I mean, it was. Yeah, it's.
Might as well send a woman because, you know, there's a 50-50 chance that the whoever goes up will die anyway.
I don't think we'd embark on something like that from scratch anymore.
First pig in space.
Yep.
Monkeys and dogs. All kinds of things got sent up. Don't think we would bother at all now. Now we just send robots.
Yeah, and leave them to die a cold, isolated death.
And yo-yo guys.
Yo-yo guys?
There's a thing about a guy doing not that particularly good yo-yo tricks on the International Space Station on YouTube. It's very obviously for quite young students, young children.
Right.
So for not young
children to
be watching.
I would imagine doing yo-yo tricks in zero gravity is actually really bloody difficult.
Well, maybe. He's renamed a bunch of tricks. He's got like orbit the moon and tethered whatever and all that stuff. And it's like, okay, well,
alien.
It's not very easy to do those tricks on the Earth's surface, but... Still, your one-liners and patter are awkward. Fate has ordained that the men who went to the moon to explore in peace will stay on the moon to rest in peace. These brave men, Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin, I'm desperate to say Buzz, know that there is no hope for their recovery, but they also know that there is hope for mankind in their sacrifice. These two men are laying down their lives in mankind's most noble goal, the search for truth and understanding. They will be mourned by their families and friends. They will be mourned by their nation. They will be mourned by the people of the world. They will be mourned by a Mother Earth that dared send two of her sons into the unknown. In their exploration, they stirred the people of the world to feel as one. In their sacrifice, they bind more tightly the brotherhood of man. In ancient days, men looked at stars and saw their heroes in the constellations. In modern times, we do much the same, but our heroes are epic men of flesh and blood.
So it's nice, there but was it's an not the same without the New England accent.
I'm sorry about that. There was an expectation. There was a very strong expectation that they wouldn't make it off the moon.
Well, I don't know that expectation is the right word, but it was a factor that was considered and certainly not ruled out.
Yeah.
To the extent that speech was written in the event that they didn't. And
that
it was
they
a speech
stranded.
That President Kennedy would have delivered to
no.
the nation and the world.
Nope. No. Kennedy had been dead for 7
years.
Oh,
not Kennedy. No. Who was it?
Nixon.
Nixon. So
Nixon
no New England
got to take
Nixon,
the credit.
Nixon. I was thinking of the speech where he announced the plan.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. That was what was to be said when they failed to leave the moon and were to die in a cold, isolated place in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Or middle of nothing.
Next. Not a lot of mention of praising Jeebus in that, which would obviously happen now. First and foremost,
well,
they'd be praising Jeebus.
Yeah, maybe. Depends.
Modern
depends on who was
American
delivering
politics.
The speech.
Well, would it? I think it's what Obama would start with, and it's obviously
I don't know if
you'd
start with praising Jesus. I'm sure there'd be a nod to God in there.
Yeah.
There's an interesting thing I've been reading lately. There's a blog on the internet called Little Green Footballs.
Yeah.
which used to be what I'd call a right wing nut job blog.
Yeah.
The guy who was the proprietor there used to was really heavily right wing, hugely Islamophobic, massively pro Israel, very anti left. And he came to his senses, I would say, yeah, and turned it around. It's now completely the opposite of that. It now criticizes all of those things incredibly strongly. And it's very interesting because many of the people on there are former right-wing nut jobs themselves. So they have a very interesting perspective in the commentary.
Yeah.
But they posted a bunch of things about Neil Armstrong and about various insane right-wing stuff about, about using Neil Armstrong's death as a swipe at Obama.
Yeah.
Very peculiar.
Mm. You know who else is a crazy right-winger who, I'm not going to say he came to his senses because there is obviously more to the story.
Of course. I do know who this is.
Yep, John Banks, to vote for marriage equality, certainly in the first reading anyway. He's announced
that he will... But he won't say why?
Well, it's obvious why. He is voting for it because his party's told him to. This is strongly against John Banks's history, who voted against the homosexual law reform.
Law reform and civil unions and probably anything else a little bit gay.
Was he there for civil unions?
Oh, no, he might not have been. No, he probably wasn't.
I don't think he was there for civil unions.
He was probably mayor of Auckland.
This is absolutely appropriate to the ACT party's history. They voted in favour of civil unions. As a bloc, they voted in favour. So I think the expectation... they are ostensibly a socially liberal libertarian party and supposedly economically liberal as well.
That was always a large part of it anyway.
I think that he got the hard word, and I think that in this case he actually had to listen to it, and I think he must be holding his nose. It'll be interesting to see what happens when the actual, because now it just the first reading just means it now gets to progress to select committee, mean this doesn't make it a law tomorrow. I think the vote's tomorrow. Podcast's out, doesn't make it a law. A couple of days ago, yesterday. I'm not keeping up with the time at all, am I?
No, you're not. It's not pretty simple. Not maintaining the pretense.
It's pretty simple. I should be ashamed of myself, probably. So who knows what's going to happen when it actually comes, forward as actual legislation to be voted, into a bill.
It'll be more interesting then, because anyone who, any MP who gets flack for voting for the first reading can say, well, look, yeah, I just wanted to,
have the conversation
pass through the proper, proper process.
And that is what should have happened with all those goddamn idiots who were asked by, the news media over the last several weeks, are you voting for or against? And they, so many of them, without fail, the ones who the expectation was that they were going to be voting against it, they were all like, oh, I haven't given it a moment's thought. No, I haven't thought about it.
I'm still considering it. And then
still a week later, still haven't given it a moment's thought. Bullshit! You haven't given it a moment's thought. What they should have all said, what they should have all done was, I'm going to vote for it to go to select committee. They should have all just said that.
The problem for them is they're chicken shits.
They are chicken shits. That's why they shouldn't be in the fucking
house. They're afraid of being voted out, and it's too hard to explain, I only voted for it so we could discuss it.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, in terms of chicken shits, Ben Gracewood, someone we both know.
Yeah. So fucking fired. Ben fucking Gracewood.
Never turns up for the show.
Dirty old Ben.
He's been hassling Phil Twyford, who is his local MP, or is he local MP, or one of his, or no, an MP who's in his area. I don't know. I think his local MP is Toe Henry, but anyway.
Toe.
He's been hassling Phil Twyford to say whether he'd vote for it or against it pretty much every day on Twitter.
Yeah.
Today, finally, Phil Twyford has responded, not on Twitter, but on Facebook, and said, yes, he will vote for it.
Yeah. On MySpace.
on MySpace.
On Bebo. I'm not saying anything about Phil Twyford's sexual predilections, that there are a lot of young children on Bebo. Listen, that was a joke. I have no idea if he's a dirty pedo or not. I would never suggest that this is getting worse and worse. It was a simple joke. I don't think he is. I don't have evidence that he is.
So when you listen to this, you'll know what happened. I don't know yet because it's the future.
It's the future. The
but
year
I was also wondering today whether anyone in Parliament would speak against it, would argue against the bill. I can certainly see people arguing for it, and I can see people saying nothing and voting against it. But I do wonder whether anyone in the House will stand up and express a negative opinion about the bill.
They would be out of their minds to do so. And the reason that they would be out of their minds to do so is summed up pretty well, actually, on David Farrer's Kiwi blog in a post called "The Politics of the Same-Sex Marriage Issue." 6 points, and he lays it out pretty clearly. And I think that on this, David's been pretty straight and it's awkward to say right. Oh, that was unintended. It's awkward to say right because what I mean is we have agreed since the beginning. So, of course, I may not be correct, but I feel pretty strongly that I am. And we've had a warning from the chat room. Don't read the comments on David Farrer's blog post. I would never.
Oh, none of them.
I would
don't
never
read any
make
of the comments
sort of mistake
on Kiwi blog about this.
It is an awful website. So, number one. Most New Zealanders support marriage equality. Now, let's not forget David Farrer is a pollster. I don't always agree with his interpretation of polls. It often seems quite self-serving. He is about as partisan as you can come on most issues. But when he's talking about the polls, maybe, well, even there, actually, I'm not sure. But in this case, several polls have found, there's a quote, several polls have found New Zealanders support allowing same-sex couples to marry by around a 2-to-1 majority. Among those under 35, it is over 4-to-1 in favour and 3-to-1 in favour amongst under 55s. So basically, New Zealanders do already support marriage equality, and the ratio at which we support it is only increasing it because an overwhelming majority of younger people, by which I mean people under 35, an overwhelming majority of those support it. So any politician who is in now and wishes to stay in would be serving their own interests, which is something politicians are very good at, by not angering their voters at, you know, the following elections.
Yeah, look, it's easy to overlook a vote against the bill. It's not going to be easy to overlook recorded quotes arguing against it in the House.
Yeah, and I think that's possibly why New Zealand First, whose demographic to me appears to be probably trending towards the oldest of any of the parties.
I believe John Banks has suggested that their supporters will die off.
And that's possibly right. But they are not. They have not indicated that they intend to vote against the first reading. They are merely abstaining.
No, they're not abstaining.
I thought that are they just not going to be in the House?
NZ First does not abstain from votes as their
Oh, but the Herald said that they were marked down as intending to abstain.
Did a statement I saw today said that New Zealand First does not abstain.
Well, there we go. So I guess we find out what that means tomorrow.
Mm.
That might mean that they all get up and walk out before the vote.
Which surely would be counted as abstaining anyway, wouldn't it?
Not present. Surely not present is the same as abstain.
Mm.
Point number two on this Kiwi blog post, most national supporters support marriage equality. The National Party annual conference this year voted 2-to-1 on the main floor to support allowing same-sex couples to adopt, which is not the same thing, but it is related.
Obviously, yeah, well, that's one of the arguments against marriage equality is that once they're allowed to be married, the gays can adopt. Then. And it's like, well, sure, you don't mind marriage, but think of the adoption. Think of the children. Once children get adopted by gays, they...
Well, it turns out that having that knee-jerk reaction to adoption, which I think is obviously going to be much more of a hot-button issue for more people, even there, a majority of actual right-wingers are in favour. The people are even against same-sex adoption, and I think that there's possibly more of them than there are people who are against same-sex marriage, I'm assuming that. Even there, the people against it are kind of the margin. Not wishing to marginalise people for having an unpopular view, but they are wrong. And I think that history will show them to be wrong. I'm guessing history, of course. Number three, swinging voters, which tends to be a majority of women, most strongly support marriage equality. And of course, last election was pretty close. This election is going to be pretty close as well. You don't want to fuck off the swing voters. Number four, a law change is inevitable. And basically, that's because such a large majority of younger people It seems really weird to me to call under 35s younger people, but I guess it's accurate. Such a majority of younger people support it that it's inevitable. It will happen because all the olders are going to die out and go away, and all the younger people will get a little bit older and run for Parliament, and a bunch of them will get in, and eventually it will just happen.
Mm-hmm.
And number five, do you want to be on the wrong side of history? Which is a little bit harder to explain to some people if they believe that they're right. But, you know, I still hold it against Banks, what he did and said in 1986, and probably would never be able to vote for him because of it. And he was wrong. And it's quite clear now, probably even to him, that he was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, there were men arguing against voting enfranchising women with the suffragette movement. Were they right to argue against it? No. History says, you know, it was actually... It's pretty important. History says that was inevitable. It was the way it was going to go, and it's the way it's gone almost everywhere in the world since. You know, I think actually Switzerland beat us to it. But they had only a certain category of women could vote, and it was only for a limited period, and it was for like 10 years or 15 years or something women could vote in Switzerland, and like 1800 or something. And then they... they disenfranchised. Yes, they came to their senses and took the vote away from the women. So then we kind of were the first to, you know, be a bit more comprehensive, a bit more even-handed about it. Dirty Swiss, sneaky Swiss. They do love that Nazi gold. Next story.
The bit I was looking for today, though, was... meanwhile, New Zealand First's 8 MPs refusing to say how they will vote, although MP Brendan Horan signalled they will oppose the bill. He said the party's MPs, quote, don't abstain on votes.
Right. Brendan Horan was on Native Affairs a few weeks ago. Actually, it was probably a couple of months ago now. He was such a tool. Such a tool.
Bit useless.
You know, if Tohenare is more liberal than you are and says, of course I'm going to vote for it, it doesn't even make sense for me not to, that's probably got to tell you that voting against it is a bit insane, because that dude is not exactly, you know, a bastion of you know, socially liberal thinking.
What I like about New Zealand politics compared to, I mean, the most obvious example is American politics, is that for the most part, the people in Parliament, even if we disagree with what they say and do and whatever, they actually believe that what they are doing, generally the policies that they're supporting, are the right approach to the problem.
Yeah.
We might disagree with them. We might have evidence that we say is the other way, but they're not doing it usually, I don't think. They're not doing it out of self-serving positions. You know, we don't have the ridiculous lobbying that the US government has. We don't have all that just insanity.
We do have a lot of lobbying. It's certainly not the same as it is in the States, but we do have a lot of lobbying. And I believe that we do have a bit of the old back scratching. If you look at the number of MPs who then go onto boards when they leave the House, and often industries...
But I think that generally, you know, the National Party isn't being disingenuous when they say, when they propose that selling the state assets, you know, is a sensible approach to managing the debt. They can come up with many reasons.
No,
why
they don't believe that. It's ideological. They just believe.
Oh, it is ideological.
They believe that the state shouldn't have a hand in operating the infrastructure. That's why they want to get rid of it. It's not about paying anything down.
No, it is ideological, but it's something they, you know, it's actually their belief and their approach to how they want to do it. It's not driven by anything
else. I don't
think
that's true. I don't think that they believe that that's a good way to pay down debt. I believe that they see this as a great way to get rid of assets that they don't think the government should hold. So I think they've put on it is absolutely merely mouthed lies.
Oh, certainly. Possibly.
Yeah. But I believe that they honestly do want to be rid of those assets, just probably not for the reasons that they claim. I mean, if you look at how little of our... how little that they will balance out our you know, currently quite badly damaged economy.
I guess what I'm saying is, you know, when Tohenare says, you know, a bunch of dumb things that we don't agree with, I think it's because he thinks they're right. Yeah. And when he says that he's going to vote for marriage equality, I think it's because he thinks that's right. It's not because he thinks it's, you know, the most politically expedient thing to do or
I think with Toe, that's correct. I think with someone like Brownlee or Key, it's not correct.
No, definitely there are people out there who are... Well, I don't know. I think probably they also think it's the right thing to do, but they are willing to do it because they also think it's politically expedient or not damaging.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's, certainly in this issue, being quite as narcissistic as making their decisions based solely on... Well, no, actually, that's not true. There are definitely people who, will vote against it.
Yeah.
Regardless of what they may necessarily think.
Yeah.
I'm still getting emails back because I sent an email through the convenient Protect Marriage website to all of the MPs in Parliament stating my support for marriage equality. Mm. And I'm still getting emails back from various ministers of Parliament occasionally.
Yeah.
I got one back from Gerry Brownlee's office today saying my feedback would be passed along, not saying anything about how he planned to vote.
That's very subversive of you, Dylan.
Yeah, I was very pleased when I discovered that I could put whatever the hell I wanted in their form and send it to all the MPs.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's a thing.
If this was a technology podcast, we could talk about Apple's legal win this week over Samsung.
I don't understand it enough. It seems ridiculous. Some of the things I've read about it are just mind-boggling.
Well, let me tell you one thing that I can't find any rational discussion
of it.
Here is one thing that I have. Oh, well, I've got an excellent rational discussion of it. It's on theatlantic.com, and it's what Apple's legal win over Samsung means for you, technology, design, and the world. But I don't really want to talk about that whole story. What I want to talk about is the foreman of the jury, who was a patent holder himself,
yeah.
And apparently convinced everyone. Basically, just
that he understood how patents work.
Exactly. And the reason that they came back so quickly was that he took it upon himself to explain to them how everything worked and how great the system was. Who knows what that's going to mean for
them? Didn't I see that they had 109 pages of jury instructions from the judge? Something like that.
Right. Yeah, and like 700.
And they returned a verdict in what, like 20 hours or something?
Yeah, much too fast. Answering 700 questions that quickly, there's just no way. I mean, I've been on, you know, large committees and there's just...
Well, I've been on juries, you know, anyway. But,
damn it, I was called up for jury service, of course, everyone has been. And I went down, I didn't try to make excuses, I was like, this is great. I want to do my part as a citizen. This is one of the obligations that I have. It can't just be pensioners and unemployed people who go along and everyone else making excuses. I was like, okay, this is great. I'm going to go along and I'm going to take my intelligence in there and I'm going to try and be as unbiased as possible. And then my name wasn't drawn from the ballot.
I got drawn from the ballot and I ended up on a jury. Other people got drawn from the ballot. They walk up. Before they reach the jury seating area, one of the lawyers says, excuse or whatever the hell it is, and they just walk away. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, oh, stink.
I don't think, even if I'd been drawn on the ballot, I don't think I would have made it through.
No, no one would let you through. No. But yeah, there's that. And there's the point he said that they basically discarded discussion of prior art.
Objection, Your Honor, objection. Can you imagine that from the jury?
That'd be good.
Badgering. He's badgering the witness. That's the bailiff.
I've seen this on TV. So did you see that, though? The foreman of the jury also went ahead and said that they discarded the discussion of prior art because it was too complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So it's basically the whole thing was, I think it was outrageous.
Did they lose the trade dress thing?
I don't know.
Didn't they? Basically a rectangle. They lost the idea of a big screen with buttons on it. It's a rectangle. Because the weird thing about it is there's no shortage of evidence publicly, you know, on the internet and stuff, that Samsung already had phone concepts like that before the iPhone was released.
Yeah.
I don't understand. That's the thing. I don't understand it. And I can't be bothered spending hours trawling through all sorts of pro-Apple and pro-Android fanboy bullshit.
Yeah.
To try and find out what's actually going on.
Yeah. You know who's definitely not in any trouble because of this?
No.
Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, no, they're all different. Although they've got Pinch to Zoom, don't they? Oh, but they license it.
Hasn't everyone got that? So last week you made a joke. We were talking about mazes and lasers. This is in that overflow, which we're going to talk a little bit about.
Corrections.
And you said if you had a laser, you would probably point it at an aeroplane. Well,
I said that.
You said that, and I at the time thought that it was ill-advised.
Oh well, it was a joke because
I know it was a joke. But we have a huge listenership, and a lot of our listeners are inebriated when they listen,
and they're very impressionable.
They're so impressionable. So, from the Herald, just days after last week's show was released, Laserbeam strikes Air New Zealand pilot. A Laserbeam struck an Air New Zealand pilot in the eye while flying into Blenheim last night. Police said they were still trying to identify the source of the laser. It is believed the beam came from the suburb of Whitney, but police still don't know the definitive point from where it was shone. Blenheim police confirmed the pilot was struck in the eye, but said the aircraft landed without any problems. Police are encouraging anyone who has further information to contact them.
Have you played with the laser pointer, Morgan?
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Have you?
Have I butted it at my own eye? Yes.
Does it do more than slightly startle you for a moment?
No.
What I don't understand about this whole
laser. But I never used one of these big, strong, modern green lasers.
But are they? Is that even. Like, because.
But I understand that what happens is it's not that it hits you in the eye, but that it hits the screen and then scatters from the screen. And so the whole, like, polycarbonate or whatever it's made of, windshield on the plane, becomes basically. It stops being, you know, transparent. It
becomes a giant green
thing. And just becomes a big green glowing thing.
And you think you've flown into some sort of cloud of radiation.
And it's like, God damn it, again, they told me they'd paid the UFO license fee.
Yeah. Because, I just don't understand it. Because I've tried pointing lasers at things and, you know, by the nature of them being quite small and very focused, that it's very hard to keep the point in any one place for any period of time. I don't understand how you can illuminate the cockpit of an aircraft with a laser pointer from, you know, whatever, 700 meters or however far away they are.
Yeah. Well, some of those lasers now are ridiculous. They are so dangerous.
And I don't understand how... He had one that could pop balloons.
It's ridiculous. Imagine a child playing with that. You would be blinded in minutes. You'd be blinded in minutes if you were a child playing with one of them. There's just no way you wouldn't either shine it directly into your own eyes or shine it onto a highly reflective surface while you're just messing around. And then, you know, suddenly your eye goes friggin' opaque. Absolute madness.
Next story.
Other madness. This whole thing with tying our economy and tourism in New Zealand to the goddamn Lord of the Rings. So this is a story, not even from a New Zealand website. This is from Topless Robot, who I've had stories from, you know, several times. New Zealand is, and it's ridiculing us for how ridiculous, in fact, we are being. We deserve it. We completely deserve it. New Zealand is officially pretending it's Middle Earth now. And this is with our own tourism campaigns. It's the smartest thing the Kiwis have done since giving Peter Jackson another shit ton of tax breaks to film the Hobbit movies there. Really, can officially renaming the country to Middle Earth be that far behind? I don't know any New Zealanders, so can someone tell me if anyone there would actually care? I would. Note, this is almost certainly the first step towards a national law that every New Zealander would have to dress like a Hobbit, complete with feet prosthetics at all times. I'm certain...
I don't need prosthetics for my feet.
No, I don't. I seem to remember your feet being quite stumpy. I'm certain Kiwis would be perturbed with that. But one, if you don't comply with the law, you'll be sentenced to 2 to 5 years in the mines of Moria. And two, the rest of the world pretty much think you guys are all hobbits anyway. So I'd get used to 11sies if I were you.
I'm used to 11sies. That's fine.
Should we be doing this? I don't think we should. We're being ridiculed for it. We don't need to do that. Let's encourage... more export from... I mean, what if we had a reputation as the world's greatest Windows Phone 7 app developers? Wouldn't that be better? Ben's trying to make that happen.
That'll get, what, 4 or 5 people here a year?
Yeah, maybe that many. Maybe like for a conference or something. maybe not that many.
At Ben's place. Yeah. So what's the ad in which... What the hell... Where are we branding ourselves? Middle Earth?
Well, this is an ad.
Beneath southern skies, where glacier and ocean meet, a land where giant eagles once guarded the skies, where creatures dwell in ancient caves, where streams that run hot feed rivers that run cold, and where warrior princesses know how to warm your heart, where wizards turn water into wine, and where the people of the land can fly. Where sea creatures walk on land. And where you can play on mountains protected by gods. It's a place that will forever keep you under its spell. Traveler, your dreams are waiting.
All right, so it was actually a really nice ad.
Good.
It was a bit oversold. was a bit oversold. It was lovely imagery. It was all very clean and green, though. It wasn't a hell of a lot of, you know, urban stuff. We've got some really good restaurants in New Zealand, you know. We've got some of the best coffee in the world. But, you know, apparently we just have hills protected by God.
45
That's
minutes.
Our number one. Wow, 45 minutes.
Yeah, we're talking about a lot of shit quite slowly. So we're Middle Earth, great. Yeah, isn't there a big thing at Auckland International Airport that says welcome to Middle Earth?
Probably.
It's been a long time since I've arrived from overseas.
Next story.
Pizza maker awaits court's Segway ruling. So since last week when we spoke about Sal's Pizza opening in Parnell and how they deliver on Segway, they've been told by the police that they have to stop.
Yeah, the police have decided that Segways are, what is it?
Motor vehicles.
And thusly, they need a registration, a warrant of fitness, and they need to travel on roads.
Yeah.
Which must be quite the shock to a lot of Segway owners, because I don't think I've ever seen one with a warrant of fitness or a registration on it.
No, certainly not. The one I've seen the most often was from a chap who I think wasn't very good at walking. And who needed it to get around the Auckland University campus. And quite so he would roll around very slowly on the footpath, but much faster than trying to hobble around on his not very functional legs.
I find it difficult to see how they're that much different from mobility scooters, really.
They are. Well, no, that's right, because many mobility scooters can go pretty quick if you give them, you know, a handful. And
they're driven by crazy old people.
That's right.
Usually.
Who can't be trusted and definitely don't know how to make it reverse.
No.
Yeah, so anyway, this
seems
madness.
Bizarre.
Absolute madness. They're designed to be used on footpaths.
Well. What's that?
They're designed to be used on footpaths.
Of
you know, you're
are.
Not
yes.
significantly taller than a person. You're not significantly heavier than a person. You're probably moving a bit faster than most people, but so fucking what? What's the worst that can happen?
Also,
someone gets bumped.
You'd get into trouble if you drove the damn thing on a road because, first of all, it can't be registered because it doesn't have indicators.
Much too slow for the road.
I would assume.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't go fast enough. So you'd be, you know, the police would pull you over and tell you you weren't to drive the damn thing on the road, which I think they've also said.
All right, I
think you could drive them in your backyard.
I'm culling stories quickly.
Next story.
So a New Zealand study found that children smoking marijuana has pretty, it has negative effects on memory and IQ in their 30s. In fact, the average decline in IQ between the age of 13 and 38, when two IQ tests were administered, was 8 points, which probably that seems like quite a lot for someone who has an IQ of 100, which I guess must be something like a majority of people. I wouldn't mind because I'd still be goddamn near a genius, even minus eight. I smoked a little bit of weed at school. I wouldn't say a lot. I was never a regular smoker, just, you know, at the odd party. But I've sometimes blamed my quite sketchy memory on it. But coincidentally, I was talking to my mother at lunch the other day. She happened to come into town. And I was talking about how I was worried about my memory, not mentioning the, you know, certain amount of drug use at school. And she said that she had exactly the same thing. And she certainly wasn't, you know, a recreational drug user in her teens. No way at all. Not a chance.
I think, I do wonder, I haven't read the article. I've seen the headlines and whatever.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree it's probably not a good idea to smoke drugs when you're, you know, a teenager. Sure.
I think we probably do agree.
Although it's probably better to smoke marijuana than half butane, so that's something.
That is exactly the order of stories I was going to go for.
But
yeah,
I haven't read enough about it to understand whether or not it is causational or correlational, this study, because I do wonder that, you know, I dare say from just stereotypical things that people who maybe smoked a lot of marijuana when they were 13 perhaps have other things going on in their lives as well.
Yeah, well, I've actually seen some really interesting ideas about this. The possibility that it's associated with schizophrenia, because possibly those people as teenagers who start to suffer symptoms are self-medicating a bit. And so there it might just be a correlation rather than causative there as well. And that's long been an association. And so, it's possible that teenagers who are feeling, you know, depression or whatever, they get on the weed. It doesn't cause the depression or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, a team of researchers from New Zealand, the UK and the US analysed data from over 1,000 individuals enrolled in the Dunedin cohort study and found that, well, exactly what I just said, that there's this decline.
That smoking weed when they're a child isn't a good idea.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'll encourage my children not to do it. Done.
Yeah. And anyway, the Bhutan thing. I would far rather that teenagers have the occasional bit of marijuana than that they have the occasional or any butane huffing, because that is absolute madness. Oh, and one thing to point out. In this study, the people who had the decline were only those who started before the age of 18. Cannabis users who started over the age of 18 didn't experience anything like the same decline, and I don't think it actually found any decline. So there you go. It's probably fine for adults. We find once again that the harm is pretty fucking trivial. There is little or no harm for adults to smoke weed. So
Max Coyle, who we spoke about before, was a Green Party candidate in Hamilton, I think, before his girlfriend did something stupid or whatever it was. On Facebook said yesterday, two people have died from huffing butane over the past 2 years. In 2008, 254 people died from alcohol, which is fine, except it's ridiculous because there is no safe way to huff butane. It's a neurotoxin.
I'm having wine right now, and I will not die from it. I might sound like an idiot. I possibly will damage my reputation.
It was a pretty dumb thing to say, but I mean, huffing butane is just, it's, you know,
I don't understand why anyone does it. What is the upside?
You know, the weird thing, when I was in high school, me and my friends figured out a way we could feel slightly high by hyperventilating. We didn't need butane or anything else.
And
we just
fainting,
breathed
right?
fast.
Did you do the faint thing, or did you just...
Yeah, that's the one. You hyperventilate and then sort of...
Absolute madness. You know, that could kill you, possibly.
Next story.
And if it killed you, would your books and music die with you, Dylan? This is
mine
from
would.
/. Many of us will accumulate vast libraries of digital books and music, and I'm going to add a little bit, movies and TV, and photos, over the course of our lifetimes, reports the Wall Street Journal. But when we die, our collection of words and music may expire with us. I find it hard to imagine a situation where a family would be okay with losing a collection of 10,000 books and songs, says author Evan Carroll, of the problem created for one's ears with digital content, which doesn't convey the same ownership rights as print and CDs. So what's the solution? Amazon and Apple were mum when contacted, but with the growth of digital assets, possibly it's time to reform and update IP laws so that content can be transferred to another person.
I dare say the problem, one of the things that many, I guess, companies that deal in intellectual property, so, you know, publishers and music companies and things, one of the problems I've always had is what in the US is called the first sale doctrine, which is, you know, when you buy something, you can sell it.
Yeah.
There's often been attempts to remove or impede that. Digital assets make that completely possible, that now you don't own the things you own because they're not yours. They're licensed to you. And if you don't, you know, if you lose access to your account, you don't have them anymore. There's lots of things that can get rid of them. And certainly dying is one of those things. You just can't, there's no legal avenue for you to transfer your ownership of those things to another person.
Yeah.
If they can keep using your username and password, fine. You know, in terms of an iTunes account or whatever. But other than that, nothing. You can't copy them. You can't play them. Everything about digital rights management makes it harder for legitimate users.
Yep.
Everything.
That's been my experience. Once upon a time, I was a naughty little games thief. I would steal my computer games. I haven't done it in many, many years. But I tell you what, the experience with downloading a game, you download an ISO, I don't know what it's like now, but back then what you did was you downloaded an ISO, you'd mount it with a virtual CD or DVD-ROM drive, you'd install it and play it. My experience with buying games, which is what I've been doing now, you know, for years, probably I haven't downloaded a game in a decade. I mean, I've illegally. And my experience now, even with games from Steam, is that particularly with DVDs, you have to goddamn well spin the thing up. Sometimes I've had cases which have arrived from you know, Mighty App and so on, where either there was no serial number or no friggin' disc. I don't think I ever had no disc from Mighty App, but I had no serial number once. They didn't include the manual. How the hell am I meant to install it? I had no key. I've had cases where the disc couldn't read. I've had many cases where I've had to install internet like install like their own social network basically software and stuff that has to run all the time, and it's ridiculous. And without that stuff, I could just play the game. If I do it illegally, I can just play the game. If I pay, I have to do all this other shit before I can even get into my game.
And so the classic simple example is the DVD.
Yeah,
you buy a DVD, you have to watch an anti-piracy warning. You quite often have to watch a few minutes of trailers before you can even get to the main menu of the DVD. You pirate a DVD, or you downloaded a pirated movie, you put it on, you put play, you push play, and it's playing.
Yep.
Done.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, and, you know, everything about digital rights management makes our life harder.
They don't make it fun to be legit.
Next story.
You know how else it's not fun to be? That is black. Black teenager who was stopped and searched 50 times between the ages of 14 and 17 will sue London cops for harassment. This, of course, once again, is the fucking Met.
Well, it's specifically in relation to an incident where he was searched, detained, handcuffed.
Constable John Lovegrove arrested the teenager during a stop and search, alleging that he assaulted the officer during a stop and search. The case went to court but then collapsed when footage showed that the teenager lay there like a dead fish during the search and did not roll over or spit, as was alleged by the constable.
Yeah, so basically the cop lied. Had the CCTV footage not caught the incident, the kid would have been convicted on the cop's word.
Yeah, I think people, if you ever see something going on, record it. Always record it. It might be in favour of the police. It might be really useful for them. It might be just a boring clip where nothing interesting happens. Or, you know, you might stop a miscarriage of justice.
There are a lot of people now who also take to recording all their interactions if they ever have an interaction with police, recording it either audio or audio and video.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you can do it. It's really easy to do now.
Yeah.
Next story.
Woman in wedding dress drowns in Quebec River. Police say Maria Pantazopoulos' dress got too heavy for her to lift. So she was standing on the edge of a river, and it sounds like just the hem. She was only in, they say, 15 to 30 centimetres of water. And it soaked up into her dress, and it got so heavy that she couldn't get out. And then even though two people tried to help her out, they must have been fucking weaklings. I don't understand this story at all. I wonder if they raped and drowned her.
Jesus Christ, Morgan. Corrections.
I'm sure it was all completely innocent. But how the hell did this happen?
Well, I don't know. There's lots of wedding dresses can have a shitload of fabric in them.
That's true. Hey, we've got to get through some stuff really, really, really fast. We've got about 2.5 minutes to do everything.
Let's open up the tote bag.
Justin at Juffman on Twitter. An overflow bigger than the main show. Oh, hell yes. That's right. It's actually long been the opinion of our faithful, friendly listeners and community colleagues and whatever we call our friends who listen to the show, that if there's a good overflow, it probably means there's a good episode. Not last week. Let's open up the tote bag once again. Brendan Syrup at Atomic Playbzori. Listening to Morgan do botched apology after foul tolerance of religion on discourse. In tears laughing.
Yeah.
Spot on.
Corrections.
Speaking of the overflow last week, it's not really
corrections.
Really, this is an apology. What I did last week was, really obvious that Dylan wanted to go. And so I just kept doing stories that normally I wouldn't do. So I feel bad, but not that bad, but
I checked out for the last 10 minutes. I was barely paying attention.
Hey, Dylan.
Hey.
Discourse.co.nz/VPN.
Poorly considered and unexpected segment. Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Heads or tails, Morgan?
Heads.
Heads, your word is naplash.
This is when you are starting to go to sleep and you jerk awake. It's actually called a myoclonic spasm, but it's sometimes by people who don't know what they're talking about, they call it a naplash.
Okay, you got it exactly right. I don't even know why I talk to you about this anymore.
We've got a winner.
Well, I had to do it fast.
Fair enough.
Best of life hacker.
I didn't find one.
Good. It's shit.
Do you have any idea how hard it is to go through all of those lists of productivity apps and articles on how to get better sleep? Do you have any idea?
Do you know how to sort your inbox?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I haven't even looked at that site in years, but I can probably predict everything that's on the homepage.
What's your auntie been talking about? What's your auntie been bloody blue on bloody blue? Copper.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Haven't seen it.
Don't really have time to tell you about it. Well, the first one was pretty good.
Great.
I think it's set in the 1860s in New York or somewhere like that, and it's about police officers. Seems a little bit early for police to me, but there you go.
Newsroom finished, and it caught up to date with the current time, I think.
It's been so good having you on the show again this week. I hope you'll join us next week when hopefully we will have Bernard Hickey from Interest Co. NZ and Journalism Org. NZ.
You're listening to the weekly show on of course.
All right, we're using that one.
Tune in right now for the extra large extended edition. Available on discourse.co.nz or in your iTunes if you're already subscribed to the weekly show.